Hello, everyone. I am Councilman Tony Heil from Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, otherwise known as Quarantined Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. And I am here with the You Should Run podcast. And if you've been listening in the past, you know that I've talked to people who have run for office or are running for office in seats all across the country at different levels of government. We want to encourage people out there to consider getting involved. There are hundreds of thousands of positions to run for, from council to judge to state legislatures to Congress. And you, your voice makes a difference no matter where you run and no matter what the challenges are. If you haven't listened in the past, I encourage you to go back to listen to the past 50 plus episodes on the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast listening device. And today I'm excited to have my first guest from South Dakota. There's not a lot of people that I can get to talk to in South Dakota, but I thought it was very important. One, because I've already talked to one Dakota, so I got to get them both. And two, because of some major issues happening there that maybe people don't realize are going on. And also to reinforce why every election and every office is so important. So please bear with me. I'm interested to talk with my guest today, Aaron Healy, state representative from South Dakota. Aaron, thank you for taking time today to talk.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be your first ever South Dakotan that you've interviewed.
I've come close to being in South Dakota because I many years ago I worked on a campaign in Iowa and I was in Sioux City and I could have gone to South Dakota, and people have bumper stickers from there, and you know, I regret it because then I could put it on those map things of places I've been.
Yeah, you're super close. You're about an hour. Well, I mean, so Sioux City, there's Sioux City, Iowa, there's Sioux City, South Dakota, and there's Sioux City, Nebraska. So you obviously were in Iowa, but you're very close to our state. And I actually am in Sioux Falls, which is about an hour and 15-ish minutes away.
So, but I don't know a lot about South Dakota except that it is rectangular and it is south of North Dakota and near Iowa. Yep. So there's a lot I want to learn. So tell me a little bit about what I should know about South Dakota politics, and of course, when did you get in touch with what's going on in South Dakota?
Yeah, South Dakota is really interesting when it comes to politics. We focus on a lot of issues that are pretty contentious, issues that kind of bog down our state legislature in terms of focusing on what really matters to our state and what we actually need to govern. So about 3 years ago, I decided to run for our state house because I had noticed that we continuously bring up issues hurting our LGBTQ agenda, women's reproductive rights, you know, issues such as that. And so I chose to be part of the solution instead of part of the problem, and I ran a campaign based off of issues that truly matter to South Dakotans: healthy families and making sure that we have high quality health care that's accessible to everybody, education, ensuring that we have well-funded public schools, and obviously our economy. Tourism and agriculture are the two largest industries in our state, so we need to continue to look at ways to promote growth and innovation when it comes to agriculture, but also bringing in new businesses in different industries that can help us grow our state.
And I was reading about you, of course, and your work. You had worked for Senator Tim Johnson in the past, right?
That is correct. Yep. I lived in D.C. after grad school for a while, working for him as a legislative correspondent, and then also near the end of his term, he actually retired at the end of his term that I served during. I became a research assistant, so I helped in areas of FEMA and economic development.
I would imagine working in issues around FEMA would be very important to have that expertise for South Dakota governing when it comes to storms, when it comes to environmental and park maintenance. That's probably something where someone looking at it from the outside wouldn't consider it. But once you mention that you have that kind of experience, it can be very valuable.
Yeah, and it was really interesting just the past year with a lot of blizzards and a lot of rainstorms that we've had, and now being a state legislator, it's interesting to see how much our economy is impacted by flooding and, you know, by bad weather. We're looking even at bad infrastructure right now with roads and bridges that need to be fixed from last year's flooding. And then obviously the economy when it comes to agriculture, a lot of flooded fields means we don't have any soybeans to sell this year.
And I talked with, I don't know if you know much about North Dakota, I talked with Kylie Overson a few months ago. She was a state representative in North Dakota and also a young woman like yourself. And especially in a place like politics where there's so many older and obviously so many men in politics. But we were talking about how when you think about global warming and climate change issues, people often think about Florida, they think about the beaches, but like you said, there is a tremendous consideration of those issues in a place like South Dakota that might not get the attention that people would expect.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, you don't really think about the problems that exist until they actually happen. And a lot of, you know, we have a lot of corn in our state and ethanol that comes up, you know, is produced by the corn. And it's not just the farm, the agriculture industry that's actually affected when it comes to big issues like this.
You had your motivation for running for office. You knew what you wanted to do. But what were the challenges of running, especially in a state like South Dakota, where, you know, the recognition can be difficult. You're going to be in the minority probably as a Democrat. What were some of the challenges that you did that you would hope other people would recognize and maybe address if they ran for office?
Yeah. So what's interesting about South Dakota is we only have 11 Democrats in our state legislature out of 70 representatives, and in our House we have 5 Democrats out of 35 senators. We are in the super minority, and it is incredibly difficult to win elections. When I made the decision to run, I knew that it would be very difficult to win, especially against 2 Republican incumbents in a Republican district. But that's why when I ran, I decided to talk to voters about the issues they care about. And that was when I knocked on their door. The first question I asked was, you know, I'm Erin Healy, I'm running for state representative. I'm here to ask you what you care about because I'm finding that my voice isn't heard. Do you feel the same way? And what issues do you care about? And if I get elected, how can we solve those problems together? And that was really well received. And then I'm also 32, and I think it's also very beneficial right now to be a younger person who's interested in solving problems, because these problems are going to be issues and solutions that impact my generation for the long run. So I think people saw me out walking, you know, walking and knocking on doors, and really started to understand that we need to all work together to solve a lot of our state's problems. And sitting here looking at legislation that continuously harms a small group of people is not an effective way to govern.
And I assume, you know, you hear about a lot of young people and they're talking about politics right now because of the presidential race. And yet you look at the people running for president, and I think Donald Trump might be the youngest one left, which is crazy, right?
Yep.
So there's this talk of, well, what's going to motivate young people in terms of candidates? Maybe the thing that motivates young people is young people actually running for office, not just looking to some other candidate.
I would agree with that. And one thing I've noticed, there's a handful of us 30-something year olds, and we all lean, most of us are Democrats, and we're here because we want to solve problems, and just by being in our state legislature, I would say that the few of us that are younger, we hear from a lot of younger people, and when we go out and see them in public, they are so appreciative to know that there are people that represent them. And I just hope that that continues to encourage younger people to run for office and to get involved and to want to volunteer for their favorite candidate, and to understand why local politics matters just as much as national politics, because we do look at who's sitting on the top level, and they don't look like me, and they probably don't look like, you know, most of my neighbors. So it really does matter who was running on a local level.
But now you're not just running on a local level. You are in office. What was that feeling on election day? Did you expect the result you got, or was it like the hard work paid off? How did you respond when you finally got those returns and realized you won?
The hard work definitely paid off. I was out from, mid-June, and every single day after work, I work a full-time job 8 to 5. So I would go out right after work and knock on doors until around 8, 8:30, depending on, where the sun was at in the sky. Knock on doors, go out on the weekends, do it all over again. And that's why I won, because I made enough connections with enough people in my district. So on election day, I was surprised because I'm a Democrat in a Republican district, but I'm also, I also wasn't surprised because I worked so hard and I was able to win votes from not just my own party, but the moderate right Republicans in my district.
So now that you're in office, obviously it's a challenge being in the minority, which I can imagine that others would be intimidated by, saying, well, why would I want to run? I can't get anything done. Obviously, your voice is making a difference. What have you and your colleagues been able to do or stop because you are there speaking up about different issues?
Yeah. Well, just for example, we passed our budget for fiscal year 2021 and for the rest of 2020 late last night, and we worked really hard as Democrats to ensure that certain priorities of ours made its way into the budget. So we had money for higher education, we had money for kids with disabilities, we made sure that there's a 2% raise for our school districts, for our community service providers, and for our state employees. Because originally, when our budget came out with the hurt in our revenue from agriculture this past year, our numbers weren't looking that great. So we had to fight to ensure that people got the increase in salary, the increase in the money provided to them to keep their agencies open, mm-hmm. and districts open. We had to fight for that. So that's one example. Other examples is we'll often team up with some of the Republicans to fight harmful legislation, like the anti-LGBTQ one we saw earlier this year that would criminalize doctors for giving trans youth treatment. So there's a variety of different ways that we play offense. We know as Democrats that we can't move forward with a lot of issues that Democrats in the state of South Dakota care about. But we also know that we can work with Republicans on issues that truly matter. I, for one, worked on early learning. We're one of a few states in the nation who doesn't have any funding or any, we don't do anything in the arena of early learning, preschool or early learning programs, child development, that kind of thing. So that was my hard push this year, was to work on that. And unfortunately, that bill didn't pass, but we definitely made a huge move in and gained a lot of momentum by pushing that issue this year.
Yeah, you talk about what you're able to do in the minority. I remember when I first was interested in politics many years ago, North Dakota and South Dakota each had two Democratic senators. And now it's kind of like, why Democrats shouldn't even run for federal office in those states, is what some people would say, because there's no chance, though, you know, there's less votes you have to get to win, I guess, because there's less population. What do you think is the main reason why the states that used to have these, you know, populist, I don't know if it would, because pragmatic Midwestern senators from the Democratic Party, and now it seems it's like such a challenge?
Yeah, you're right. We used to have Tom Daschle and Tim Johnson and Congresswoman Stephanie Hirst of Sandlin, and we don't see that anymore. We see very far-right conservative representatives and a representative and senators. And I think what's happening is the Republican Party is really good at their talking points. I would go door-to-door, and they would say, you know, Democrats want to spend money and tax us. And I'm pretty sure I haven't voted for any tax increases while I've been here. So I'm going to make sure that I tout my voting record. Side note there. But I also think there's a lot of gerrymandering going on in our state. So especially when it comes to districts in our state house, we have about 36% to 42% Democrats in our state, and that is clearly not a reflection when it comes to our state house. Our state legislature sets those districts, and that is a conflict of interest. So until we find an independent partisan committee that can redraw those district lines after the census, we're going to continue to see a super minority and a super majority. But I just think our state is getting more conservative, and the number of Democrats are moving to the larger cities, Sioux Falls mainly, and people my age are leaving because they can't find the job that they want after college, and younger people, for the most part, tend to be leaning more liberal.
Yeah, and I imagine young people, when they see a state like what South Dakota's doing, especially with some of those social issues that you mentioned, they might not feel as welcome as they do in even some neighboring states, you know, like, and so yes. Why stay there and stay working there if they can feel more welcome in other places?
They for sure don't feel welcome. I have had friends leave this state because they don't feel welcome here, and they are fatigued by the constant issues that they see. They're hurt themselves by the decisions that state legislators make, and they have fought the fight and they have not won the battle, and they have chosen to leave because they're tired of it, and they don't want to continue on in a state like that. And unfortunately, I understand their position. Me being in the position I am as a cisgender white woman who's educated, I feel differently. I feel like, one, my family is here, but two, I am willing to fight, and I am willing to stay here to ensure that we are focusing on the right issues. And I don't think any answer is wrong. If you need to leave a state where you don't feel welcome and loved, and you can't fulfill a life that, fills you with happiness, then you shouldn't be here. You should do what you need to do for you and your family. But fortunately, there are people who are willing to put up that fight for them.
Well, the one fight that you just apparently won, at least for the time being, is the fight on an anti-trans legislation. And it was something where South Dakota, people don't pay attention to it. And yet my social media was filled with people saying, you guys got to pay attention to what's going on in South Dakota. They're using this as a roadmap to attack trans people in other states. So what happened with this legislation? What was the legislation? And, you know, what was the groundswell like to stop it?
Yeah, so this was a bill that started at the House, and it would criminalize doctors for providing medically necessary care for transgender youth. So what the bill would do, would have done, it died in the Senate. It would codify an extremely restricted definition of sex, and that would be the biological state of being female or male based on sex organs, chromosomes, and your hormone profile. So that right there is a problem for our LGBTQ population. And then it would make a class one misdemeanor for any medical. It started out as a felony. They amended it to a class one misdemeanor for any medical providers to actually perform gender-affirming surgery or to prescribe or provide hormone therapy or hormone blockers to a minor. And that was under the age of 16. They did specify that age as a 16-year-old and under. And there are a lot of problems with that legislation. It is incredibly, it's that's not happening in South Dakota. We aren't, our doctors, our healthcare providers, they aren't performing any surgeries. I can't remember which ethics committee, but an actual ethics committee or organization for healthcare providers actually says you don't need to. Minors should never have surgeries because they're still growing and they're still developing. And that's just something that should never be done. And as for hormone blockers, another thing that just doesn't happen here in our state and rarely happens for people under the age of 16. The danger of talking about puberty blockers, though, a lot of the proponents of this bill were saying that puberty blockers are causing thousands of deaths, but in actuality, Lupron, which is the puberty blocker that they're talking about, it's used for treating puberty. It's used for treating infertility. Sometimes it's used for treating cancer, prostate or breast cancer,
Wow.
and so the deaths that they were talking about were actually happening. Because prostate cancer patients were using it and dying. And it's so dangerous when you take statistics out of context. Stats require analysis, and this is no different. So it's incredibly deceptive to use bias studies and present them in the state legislature in the way that they did.
So, trans people in particular would be seriously harmed, both their rights and their health potentially. But why? Like, I'm a rather liberal man from Philadelphia, originally from Pittsburgh, and like it wouldn't even dawn on me why you would do such a thing. Does it make your head explode listening to people try and defend such a thing?
It really does. And what's really interesting is the proponent, the main sponsor of the bill, he said that this is simply to help vulnerable children. And we heard such alarmist quotes within the committee hearing that like injecting our little 12-year-old South Dakota girls with testosterone, cutting off little girls' breasts. We heard life-altering decisions, strong and irreversible procedures. We heard them talking about experimenting on little kids. And that's the reasoning for why we shouldn't have this legislation. The sponsor of the bill even compared medical treatment for trans youth to the Holocaust. And he later apologized for it because we shouldn't be making that comparison. But he didn't make that apology until he was called out by some major news organizations. And all of these arguments are refutable. That could be the reasoning as to why this bill is necessary, but those are some major misconceptions and misinformation. And when you take away all of those false narratives, you're left with a bill that purposefully misrepresents the medical practices. And it ultimately supports a transphobic agenda.
So you guys were able, to just bring in a lot of attention to this? Is that how you stopped it? You raised the alarm bells and said, hey, everyone, look at South Dakota. We need to stop this?
Well, unfortunately, it did pass through the House. So we made all of these arguments on the House floor. We talked about how, you know, this isn't happening in South Dakota, that this sensationalism heard in our state capital is irresponsible. We need to stand in solidarity with our medical professionals, with evidence-based, you know, in truth, and we need to ensure that our trans youth have equitable access to health care. We lost, I can't remember the final vote of this bill, but we lost in the House, and it wasn't until the bill made its way to the Senate that that bill died in committee. And they made the exact same arguments in the committee. The proponents had the same arguments as to why this bill is necessary, and the opponents had the same arguments as to why this bill is terrible. And the bill died on 5-2 in the Senate Health and Human Services Committee.
But I imagine it would not have died, or it might not have died, had there not been a push from the start. You know, they obviously, the Democrats are in the minority in the Senate too, but you guys all collectively, and obviously not just Democrats, made the public charge that this was wrong and needed to not happen.
Yeah, and so there's two things here. Our Senate, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. I don't want to say they're more moderate, because that's not necessarily true, but they understand legislation that is harmful to our state and harmful to a subset group of people and to different communities. And, you know, even our South Dakota Chamber of Commerce spoke against this bill, and the Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce, and healthcare organizations, and even a senator who is a physician. He's he doesn't help trans youth. He's actually an orthopedic surgeon, but even he spoke out against this bill, that this is harmful to the healthcare industry in South Dakota, and doctors will no longer want to come practice here if we continuously try to harm their practices. So they understood the what was at risk, not just for our trans community, but also for a very large industry in South Dakota, and that's healthcare.
So we've been, when that started happening, I messaged you to be on the podcast, and it was, I have this goal of trying to get someone from every state, and that's just a thing I want to do personally. But then personally, and I don't mean to throw this on you as a surprise, I apologize, this past weekend, my friend who is trans passed away, and in Philadelphia. I don't know the cause of death. And because I don't know the cause of death, the first thought to me and to all of us who loved our friend, Evan, was that it was suicide. Now, because I don't know the cause of death exactly, and it wasn't public, you know, I'm not going to say that definitely was that, but, you know, it just really hits home how important it is to have people like you and others stand up to this hateful legislation, because you see people who, your first thought when someone harms himself and they're in a situation like that is that they feel like they're in a world that doesn't accept them.
That's 100% correct. And this legislation, it caused harm to some of our youth in our state. And I heard from, you know, just being close to different advocacy programs here, there were suicide attempts after this legislation was brought by minors, and they don't feel loved. And all they want to do is live the life that that they want to live and be the person that they know they are. They already have to fight an uphill battle in so many different ways than cisgender people have to. And we need to respect their you know, their medical needs. We need to respect their emotional needs. And until we until we stop bringing this harmful legislation, that's just not going to happen, unfortunately. And it's just so sad that there are so many good organizations trying to help, and then here we are as a state legislature trying to make decisions for families and for kids.
Well, from Philadelphia to you, I'm very glad and appreciative that you stood up to run for office and to advocate for these people. So I hope you know that it may seem lonely in the minority, but I don't think you're alone in terms of people across the country now that are grateful to those who stand up anywhere.
Yeah, thank you. And I will say, these issues are really easy issues to get up and speak on. It's not fun to be in this position when it comes to fighting legislation like this, but there's never been, these issues are the issues that, there's no doubt in my mind that I know I'm making the right decision. The hard bills are actually the bills where, you're impacting the economy or you're impacting, the budget. Those are actually the harder bills. But when it comes to issues like supporting our LGBTQ community, I wholeheartedly know that it's the right thing to do, and I'm happy to do it.
So, again, you've done this. You're obviously doing some things. That are getting done, and you're passing budgets, you're getting things, you're leading good fight. The podcast is called You Should Run. Why should other people run for office, whether it's for state legislatures, especially state legislatures this year, but for any race? What would your words of encouragement be?
Yeah, I think we need more, and I hate to say normal because what is normal? But I think we need just more average citizens to run. You don't need to be, a CEO at a company, and you don't need to be a doctor. You don't need to be a lawyer. We need people who just understand other people and are empathetic and care for others and want to do the right thing. And that's what makes a good legislator, and that's what makes a good elected official. Because when you care about people, you're going to care about making the right decisions for those people.
Great. I appreciate it. I appreciate what you've done, and I appreciate you taking time to talk on the podcast. I know you have a lot of things going on. You just passed a budget, and it just shows that young people especially can get a lot done, no matter what. So
we can, yes. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And again, happy and proud to be the first South Dakotan that you've interviewed on your podcast.
But maybe not the last. We'll see. Hopefully
not the last. Let's hope there's more.
Yes, let's hope there's more, and let's hope we get some more people elected in South Dakota across the country. The best way to get people elected is for people to run. So please, is there any way people can follow you? It seems like no one from South Dakota is on social media.
Yeah, I'm on social media, Representative Erin Healy on Facebook and Instagram. And then my website is healyforhouse.com. And from there, you'll be able to see what else I have going on. I have to update my website, actually. It's from last campaign, but I'm running again for re-election this year, so I'll be updating that pretty soon.
Great. Well, good luck in all things you're doing. Please follow Representative Healy. And if you're listening, be one of the 500,000 races in the country that are running for office. Your voice matters, and more of those average people. Thank you so much, and maybe you should run for office.